Hey everyone, this is Derek Bros with the Conscious Resistance Network, and today we are going to talk about a couple of articles I've written recently focused on the narrative shift, which is not really a new thing if you've been paying attention the last decade plus, but specifically the last couple years. But I think it's important to stop and to note and to really understand how the conversation is shifting, and especially for those who think that the only way we can stop the Great Reset, Technocracy Agenda 2030, is to focus on questions surrounding viruses or pandemics, etc. I would argue, and I think the evidence shows, that we're actually moving more and more into a direction where climate change, discussion around the climate, and use of policies related to climate change are actually what are going to propel us forward towards the Great Reset. So we'll be talking about all that and more in this video. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Derek Bros. This is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance. I'm here in Standing Rock.
That man is wanted in 5 different countries: Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
We've been fighting a long time. We've all lost so very much. So many loved ones gone.
Don't you fucking tease that horse!
You are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Above all, stay alive. You have no idea how important.
Welcome back, everyone. Again, this is Derek Bros of the Conscious Resistance Network. Before we begin, I'd like to remind you to bookmark our website, theconsciousresistance.com. Theconsciousresistance.com. Guys, this is where we're constantly putting out new content, articles, videos, podcasts, interviews, essays. You can download my books. You can watch my documentaries that I've produced over the last 10 years. And so much more. So I encourage you to check this website on a weekly basis. Sign up for our RSS feed for those who use RSS feeds. You can also, for those who use podcasting apps, you can search The Conscious Resistance and you'll find all of the recordings of my my videos, and my, including this one. So you can find that on Spotify, and you can find that on most of the lesser known podcasting platforms, whatever sort of podcatcher you use. Let's go ahead now and dive in. I want to show you, if you search theconsciousresistance.com for climate lockdowns, you're going to see a few different things here. You'll see this article, this little essay, which is a preview of my book, actually. How will you prepare for climate lockdowns, digital IDs, and travel restrictions? And this is just a preview, as it says, of this of a chapter from the second edition of my book, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State, which, for those who are watching, you can see right here. And for those who are not watching, just search How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. It's available in Spanish. It's available in English. And it's in the process of being translated to Japanese and Korean. So you can find that out. So I mentioned that to show you that I've been writing about this, and more importantly, focusing on solutions. You know, not all the solutions you're looking for are going to be found on YouTube videos or videos online, guys. I hope more and more of you actually read, you know, essays, articles, books, things like that, because sometimes information is better put in text than it is in a video. And videos, I feel like many of you think it's just like, okay, it's a weekly new video, I can watch it once and it's over, whereas books seem to kind of have a longer lasting impact. So that's why I focus on writing. You can also see that I gave a talk back at the Next Steps conference in Atlanta in late February called Opting Out of Pandemics, Climate Lockdowns, and Smart Cities. The full title was How to Opt Out in a Time of Engineered Pandemics, Climate Lockdowns, and Smart Cities. That could also be called 15-Minute Cities for those of you who are more familiar with that terminology. I share all that to say I have been writing about this. I have been talking about this. If you're concerned, if you want to know more, go visit theconsciousresistance.com, search Climate Lockdowns, search The Great Reset. Also, watch the episodes of The Pyramid of Power that I've done at thepyramidofpower.net, and you will very quickly see that this is a part of a larger agenda. Now, let's get to the articles I want to talk about. For those who don't know, I write for the lastamericanvagabond.com. If you go here to TLAV team, for those watching on the screen, you'll see Ryan, my name, Whitney, and all the rest of the team. Click on Derek Bros, my full title, full name there, and you'll get the archive of all my articles, including this latest article I wrote about Sam Altman, artificial intelligence, Bilderberg Group, and WorldCoin, which we'll talk about soon. But I want to take you to a couple of articles I wrote recently related to climate change. We'll start with this one, which has been on my mind for a couple of months. I was watching this situation develop. But I titled this, Rockefeller Foundation's New Focus on Climate Change Signals the Next Phase of the Great Reset. And that's really what I want to talk about here. Back in July 2022, Rockefeller Foundation President Dr. Rajiv J. Shah released a public letter detailing the Rockefeller Foundation's plan to increase their resources and attention to addressing climate change. Shah noted that the Rockefeller Foundation had a hand in shaping the American and global responses to the pandemic crises. As I reported before, they funded projects like the Common Pass, which was part of helping promote the vaccine passport idea. And here you can see, I was writing about this way back in, this is February 2021. I think I originally wrote about it in May 2020, though, discussing how airlines were preparing to implement vaccine passports, immunity passports, and the Rockefeller Foundation was involved in funding that. Established in 1913, the foundation, which, you know, side note, the Rockefeller Foundation being established in 1913 is interesting because that's the year that the income tax started in the United States. It's also the year the Federal Reserve was created. And we know that the bankers had a hand in the founding of the Federal Reserve Bank. So they were created to promote public health by funding mass vaccination programs and the founding of public health authorities around the world through their financial resources. And to continue their mission today, Dr. Rajiv Shah, who again is the Rockefeller Foundation president, says, we must, quote, directly confront climate change. And they write, climate change poses a singular threat to humanity. We have decided the Rockefeller Foundation will take specific actions to transform how humanity farms and eats, powers its communities and homes, prevents and protects against diseases, and lives and works. This is how we will make opportunity universal and sustainable. And they claim that they're already working on this. They've been focusing on getting women green jobs, investing in regenerative agriculture, and the foundation promises to divest $6 billion of its endowment from fossil fuels. They say that this is the largest divestment of any from this sector of any other group. They've also partnered with the IKEA Foundation, Bezos Earth Fund, to accelerate the transition to so-called renewable energy. They claim that they've already raised more than $10 billion in this. Now, the announcement that the Rockefeller Foundation, July 22, this letter that I'm reading here to you, that says that they were going to go in a new direction, it doesn't really provide any concrete details in terms of here, you know, other than what I just said, that they claim they're going to get women new jobs and they're working on renewable energy and stuff like that. But it doesn't really give any concrete plans. Okay, they're going to divest some of their money, but what does that really mean? We all, those of you who understand or have watched the Pyramid of Power on the foundations and the nonprofit industrial complex, know that there's so many problems with the way that these organizations work and the way that they hide their money from the public, and they can claim to be throwing millions or billions of dollars at a cause, and it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to get better or anything's going to change. They say that they're going to, quote, develop an integrated vision and plan for the years 2025 to 2030. Again, this stresses the importance of this timeline. For those of you who are like, oh, just going about your day, not really making any plans for the future, for your family, for your friends or community, not learning any new skills, not learning how to grow food, not thinking about an exit plan or trying to push back, it's halfway through 2023 right now, guys. We're days away from the midway point of this year. That gives us 6.5 years until 2030 and 1.5 years until 2025. That doesn't mean these people's plans will be completed exactly on those days, but my point here is that they have a timeline. They are working on their goals. Why are you not working on your goals? Why are you not working on your path? And if you are, great, good. Continue that. Continue on that path, and together, let's do something awesome, right? So Shah did acknowledge that John D. Rockefeller, founder of Standard Oil and the founder of the Rockefeller Foundation, acquired his wealth through the oil industry, which the Rockefeller Foundation says they are now against. Shah writes, quote, there is some irony here. Our namesake John D. Rockefeller founded Standard Oil and made his fortune by growing fuel and growing U.S. with carbon. He says that they are focused on what they call scientific philanthropy, using science and technology to improve the well-being of each and every person, opening up opportunity for all. And they write, obviously, an institution like the Rockefeller Foundation has an even higher level of responsibility because we're an even bigger beneficiary of that process. Now, what I want to outline here is who exactly is the current president, the person I was just quoting, Dr. Rajiv Shah, give you a little bit of background on them. Before we go into some of the background on the Rockefellers faux environmental movement, I probably won't really get too deep into that. I do want you guys to read this. And if you're not really new, if you're new to this, then all you got to do is just read my watch the Pyramid of Power on big oil, the oligarchy, and you can learn more about the history of that. You can also, I encourage you, watch the Pyramid of Power on food as a weapon, and because there's a lot of intersection between the environmental fight, food as a weapon, GMOs, ties to the oil industry. So if you understand the Rockefeller Foundation, the big oil ties to food as a weapon, ties to the environmental movement, ties to the education system, then you start to understand a picture here that we're not dealing with simply with people who have money and are want to be the beneficiaries to man, you know, the benefactors to humanity and are just doing so out of the kindness of their heart. They have a deeper plan. Now let's look at who Rajiv J. Raj Shah is, a former American government official, physician and health economist who has served in a number of U.S. government positions, worked in the philanthropic sector. Shah served as the 16th administrator of the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, from 2010 to 2015. He was appointed to USAID by President Obama, unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate, and sworn into office by former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton on January 7, 2010. For those who don't know, and again, I've covered this extensively in this article and in the Pyramid of Power, in the Foundation's Nonprofit Industrial Complex episode, USAID, along with the National Endowment for Democracy, or NED, are both known to be proxies by which the U.S. government will fund activist movements or rebellions or resistance movements in other countries in order for them to gain influence in those countries and to try to shape public policy in a way that will benefit the United States. And there's plenty of reports of the CIA being connected to NED and USAID. For those of you who've done that research, I encourage you to, again, just do some basic looking into this and follow the links that I've got here. They've been accused of funding Nicaraguan groups in the 80s and 90s to help this, overthrow governments throughout Latin America in the 50s and 60s. So that's one of the places that the current president of the Rockefeller Foundation has worked for. Another, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, where he helped create the International Financing Facility for Immunization, which is claimed to have helped reshape the global vaccine industry and raise more than $5 million for Gavi, the Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunization. So deeply tied to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, to the vaccine industry, Gavi, not a big surprise to see this person working with the Rockefellers, because the Rockefellers started what the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation has continued to this day, which is using philanthropy as a way to achieve their goals and to gain dominance. Again, I've reported extensively on Bill and Melinda Gates and Gavi and the way that they've used their control. But Shah is also a member of the Trilateral Commission. He sits on the board of directors of the Atlantic Council and is a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, call that as swampy as you like. And as I link in here, G. Edward Griffin and other researchers have done some good work over the decades exposing the Council on Foreign Relations' influence on U.S. foreign policy. I encourage you to get more into that. You can see all the different people connected to the Council on Foreign Relations, including David Rockefeller Jr., David Rockefeller Sr., who also co-founded the Trilateral Commission. And although most researchers today don't know about the Trilateral Commission is really one of the originators of promoting technocracy through people like Zbigniew Brzezinski and David Rockefeller and others. Maybe you know about World Economic Forum. Maybe you've heard about the Bilderberg Group meeting last week in Portugal, but you might not be so familiar with the Trilateral Commission, and it's important that you actually do get familiar with them if you don't know them at the moment. Let's start with one talking point here, and this comes from Patrick Wood over at technocracy.news, whose work you should know, and by the way, who's going to be featured in the next chapter of the Pyramid of Power on technocracy, where he talks about how at the recent 50th anniversary of the Trilateral Commission, they celebrated what they've been calling for decades, the new international economic order. And at their March 12th meeting in New Delhi, India, they specifically said, one of their members said, quote, "This year, 2023, is year one of this new global order." And again, Trilateral Commission co-founded by Zbigniew Brzezinski, who is a national security advisor and an advisor to many U.S. presidents, ally of Henry Kissinger, who I believe is just turning 100 this week. And Brzezinski also wrote the book Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, which is a modern version of the technocratic movement from the 1970s. Finally, Dr. Shaw of the Rockefeller Foundation is a member of the Atlantic Council. If you don't know about the Atlantic Council, you should become more aware of them. You probably heard about them maybe recently in terms of the Twitter files, but I reported on them way back in 2018 after there was the purge, the 2018 purge, where 500 plus accounts of independent media and researchers were deleted from Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. This was only 6 months after Facebook announced a partnership with the Atlantic Council to fight disinformation. So Shaw worked with them, sits on the boards of them. He also spoke at the World Economic Forum's 2022 gathering in Davos, Switzerland. He's listed as an agenda contributor to the World Economic Forum. And interestingly enough, at Davos, in an interview with CNBC, he discussed vaccine hesitancy, and he basically said that there's, quote, misinformation about the vaccines. So a lot of people who need them don't want them because they've been told something that's false, and we need to invest in this problem to turn around and change the course of the pandemic. Now, of course, the Rockefeller Foundation has been investing in vaccine access and promoting vaccines around the world to alleged high-risk groups. And they're saying that they're calling for, Shaw said there needs to be, quote, some sort of international agreement about how the world responds to pandemics, which must include a much better real-time surveillance system. So it sounds like he's pretty much in support of and calling for the so-called pandemic treaty, the international health regulations that the World Health Organization has been discussing for some time now. And also we got the Common Pass, which was promoted by the Rockefellers, and we could go on, right? So if you want to read the rest of this article, I encourage you to. It gets more into the Rockefellers' history, interfering with the environmental movement and the food. And I ask at the end, you know, is this environmental movement, or at least the people who are driving it, really a cover for eugenics? And I think the truth is that yes, in many ways. You guys understand this. They talk about a net zero future where there'll be zero output of carbon, which doesn't make much sense when you consider human beings, but that's what they claim. Now, that doesn't mean, as some of my right-wing supporters out there might believe, that the environmental movement's all a bunch of BS and we should just drive our, you know, gas-guzzling cars everywhere we go and pollute and trash and whatever, because it's only the silly brainwashed liberals who buy into the environmental movement. I don't believe that at all. I've been calling for years at the Conscious Resistance, if you search our website, for decentralized environmentalism, for using ideas like permaculture, and to do this in a voluntary way. I do believe we need to take care of the environment and the plants and the animals and the humans and the planet, but I think we need to do so in a voluntary way. Now, one other aspect of this report, this I think is a little more important as well. I found earlier this month, the United Nations Secretary laments the world not adopting the Sustainable Development Goals and calls for new commitment. This is UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. He said that the world is falling short of achieving the Agenda 2030 and that nations need to recommit to the Sustainable Development Goals by 2030. On Tuesday, this was earlier in the month, he said that the SDGs are showing a significant lack of progress, and currently the world is only have about 12% of the SDGs on track to be completed. For those of you who don't know, the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals are a collection of 17 interlinked goals to designed to be a blueprint to achieve a better and more sustainable future. That's what they tell us. These were set in 2015 by the United Nations General Assembly with the goal of achieving them by 2030. They're a part of the 2030 Agenda, or Agenda 2030, which is claimed to be fighting climate change. Gutierrez said that we are on 50% of the goals, the progress is weak and insufficient, and while 30% of the SDGs have stalled or gone in reverse. He predicted that if the current trend holds, only 30% of the nations will accomplish SDG 1, which is focused on poverty, by 2030. Quote, unless we act now, the 2030 Agenda will become an epithet for a world that might have been. He noted that in 2022, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, allocated $650 billion in special drawing rights. Now, this is interesting, with the European Union nations receiving $160 billion and SDRs in African countries receiving only $34 billion. For those who don't know what SDRs are, the special drawing rights, they're not technically considered a currency, but instead they're considered, quote, a foreign exchange reserve asset, which allows IMF member nations to exchange SDRs for a currency held by IMF members. So essentially, it's like a go-between. So if you want to get dollars from another IMF members, member, you can, and you have SDRs, you receive billions of SDRs from the IMF or through the European Union, and then you can exchange those with other IMF members for the currency you want, more than likely dollars. And I will, as I noted here, that as far back as 2013, James Corbett has been warning that the SDRs, special drawing rights from the IMF, could be the basis for a world reserve currency. So it's interesting that Gutierrez is kind of saying we need to distribute these better. He says the redistribution of the SDRs has, quote, been minimal, and thus something is fundamentally wrong with the rules and governance of the system that produces such an outcome. And he calls for people to recommit to accomplishing the SDGs. But let's just take a moment to acknowledge that, guys. This is the Secretary of the United Nations essentially putting out a report complaining that the world isn't adopting their big project fast enough, that we're 6.5 years away, as I said a few moments ago, and it doesn't appear that we're on track. And in fact, we might be going backwards, according to the United Nations, when it comes to accomplishing their precious goals that they have here. I think that's a reason to celebrate. This is not to say, oh yeah, the people are ignoring the climate or the planet or whatever, you know, have your opinions on that, but to say that the people are not blindly going along with the United Nations, World Economic Forum, World Health Organization, globalist plans to push people in this direction in the name of fighting climate change. There is resistance, there's slow movement and not much progress. And Gutierrez also talked about two different important points, and this is something I really want to hammer home as we start to wrap up here, that this is a good sign. There is slow progress, but the next step is not just to say, let's resist the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, but to say, what are we going to do instead, right? If you don't want the UN SDGs, but you're like me and you recognize that the world is broken and things aren't perfect and we do need to reset or remake or redesign the world, reimagine the world. And I think that's important, but it needs to come from the bottom up, from the people, people like us, not from the top down technocrats, World Economic Forum, World Health Organization, United Nations, Trilateral Commission, et cetera, it needs to come from the people up, not the other way around. Well, Gutierrez, he has recently discussed what he's calling the SDG stimulus, which he called for the G20 nations to commit $500 billion annually to help complete the SDGs by 2030. So get that. He's calling for all the richest nations, the 20 richest nations, to give $500 billion towards this cause. He made this plea first in February saying, quote, we need to massively scale up affordable long-term financing by aligning all financing flows to the SDGs and improving the terms of lending of multilateral development banks. Side note, I think there's probably something to that multilateral development banks. I think that's probably a mechanism they use to control various countries. I didn't have time to research it. If anybody's got the info, let me know. He also has continued his call for $500 billion annually, saying we need a massive surge in finance and it should be channeled to countries that need them. The SDRs should be channeled to countries that need them. And as I talk about here, for those of you who are familiar with John Perkins, who is, you know, wrote the book Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and I interviewed him years ago, he talked about how programs like this, loans from multilateral development banks, the IMF and World Bank, etc., are often a way for corporations and big banks to take away resources of nations from developing nations, the global south, in a way that lets them get around laws and regulations, environmental regulations and such, by using debt, by using loans, debt-based society, right? And when people default on the loans, they take what they want from them, and they use them to put in military bases and all kinds of things. So John Perkins talked about that. Now, Gutierrez also continued this call that we've been hearing recently for a new Bretton Woods moment. Now, those of you who aren't familiar, in 1944, Bretton Woods was the international agreement which helped establish rules for how different governments have relationships, monetary economic relationships with each other, including requiring each nation to guarantee convertibility into U.S. dollars. This is largely what allows the U.S. dollar to have its place as the world reserve currency. Bretton Woods agreement also established the IMF. And as recent as October 2020, the IMF director, Kristalina Georgieva, also called for a new Bretton Woods moment. So think about that. You got the head of the IMF, head of the UN calling for a new Bretton Woods moment. This is the kind of setting the stage for a new economic system, which will be based on a nature-based economy tied to the UN SDGs, the fight against climate change, et cetera, et cetera. So Gutierrez is calling for this SDG stimulus plan. He's calling for people to end the war on nature and to deliver the global biodiversity framework, which was reached by UN member states in late 2022. And I will be doing a report on that very soon about the global biodiversity framework. And again, they're calling on UN member states to rally together and recommit to accomplishing the SDGs by 2030 by participating in the SDG summit taking place in September of this year in New York City. I'm going to open this up for you. This is September 18th to 19th, New York City, United Nations 2023 SDG summit. And again, I think this is going to be important, guys. I would not ignore this. You have the head of the UN saying, oh, we're falling behind. And now they're going to host a conference dedicated just to the SDGs in September 2023. Now, Gutierrez had one more recommendation that I want to mention. He said that we need, quote, greater multilateral support for the UN development system and decisive action at the 2024 Summit of the Future. What is the Summit of the Future? Well, here's the website. According to the UN website, Summit of the Future, this is going to give us a once-in-a-generation opportunity to address gaps in global governance. The summit will also continue the push for nations to reaffirm existing commitments to the SDGs and the UN Charter. Member states will be expected to build on the outcomes of the SDG summit from this year and, quote, breathe new life into the multilateral system, which is code word for global government, and accomplish the Agenda 2030. They also say that the Summit of the Future is going to conclude with a Pact of the Future, which will be endorsed by heads of state and government at the summit. Guys, I believe that this event, the SDG summit in 2023, September, and then the Summit for the Future in 2024, and a Pact for the Future endorsed by heads of state and governments, this is creating the, as close as you can probably get, to an agreement for a global government. Because again, if you understand that the UN and all these organizations are about trying to accomplish complete technocratic control of the world, then you will understand that this is not just about the environment fighting climate change. So when we have the head of the UN saying that we're not accomplishing these goals, that we need to recommit to them, we need to have a SDG summit in 2023 and a summit of the future where we're going to sign a pact for the future, this is a big move, guys. I think we should be paying attention to this. And one other point here I'll mention, because I did find in this SDG report here, let me show you this. So let's hit Control F. I want to show you something I found while I was searching through this. This right here that I'm showing you is the report that Gutierrez was talking about. This is the progress report on the Sustainable Development Goals, where he's lamenting our progress. Now let's go ahead and look at this one here, where they talk about priority actions. This is listed under section 58. Call on all countries to deliver a national commitment to SDG transformation at the SDG summit, including by setting national benchmarks for reducing poverty and inequality, making SDG achievement a central focus in national planning and oversight mechanisms, and aligning national and subnational budgets with the SDGs. They talk about recognizing the central role of local and subnational governments in implementing the SDGs, including by designing nationally enabling frameworks to allow governments to meet their responsibilities. But I want you to understand this. This is really a big thing, a national commitment to SDG transformation at the SDG summit. This is a part of the transformation of the world that they are trying to create, guys. This isn't just coming out of nowhere. These people are working night and day planning to transform the world, and they're publicly stating it. And they're going to be doing this at the SDG summit. They're going to be doing this at the Summit of the Future in 2024. What kind of energy are you putting into your 2030? I've been saying this for a couple of years now. I said this in How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. We need to be spending as much time thinking about our 2030, Liberation 2030, Freedom 2030, Agora 2030, whatever you want to call it. It's time for us to come together as free people and decide on the world we want and create it and manifest it and build it, not simply sit on the sidelines and watch our world get turned into this insanity because we're doing nothing. You need to be spending just as much time putting your thoughts into what you want for 2030 and beyond. And for me, I've talked about the alternative to the SDGs, what I call the autonomous development goals. The autonomous mean each of us is autonomous. We own ourselves. We own our bodies. Autonomous development goals. Again, coming from the grassroots, from the bottom up, these would be a set of voluntary goals that individuals, businesses, corporations, and organizations could say, hey, you know what? Let me put a sticker on my website or a label. I support the ADGs. Instead of the SDGs, we support the ADGs, voluntary, bottom-up, grassroots, recognizing our rights and our freedoms and our liberties, and that's the world we need for 2030. Because just the way they're working so hard on their World Economic Forum meetings and Davos meetings and Bilderberg meetings and Trilateral Commission and Council on Foreign Relations and Atlantic Council, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and they're spending billions of dollars and they're working with media and multinational corporations and governments, we should be working just as hard on our vision, on our goals. This is why the Freedom Cell Network launched the Greater Reset that meets at the same time as the Davos crowd meets, the World Economic Forum meets in Davos, Switzerland, because we are offering an alternative to them. And now we are proposing the ADGs as an alternative to the SDGs. And if you want to learn more about this, I encourage you to visit my book, theconsciousresistance.com/how-to. That's where you can buy or download my book and look up the ADGs. Look up the 10 goals that I've outlined and see if they align with you. And if you're interested, reach out to me, because in the next coming months leading up to the SDG summit in New York City, myself and others, we're thinking of organizing a two-day summit in New York City to counter the United Nations and maybe a protest outside of the United Nations so that the news media can perhaps recognize that the people of the world do not stand by these plans. And we've got our own plans in mind. So check out what we're doing, guys. I invite you to join if you can. Reach out to me if you want to know more. And that's pretty much what I wanted to share, guys. The narrative is clearly shifting. The Rockefeller Foundation, the United Nations, they're making it clear it's time to commit to the SDGs. So again, if you're obsessing over the virus question or pandemics, that's sort of in the past. There may be a pandemic two to come, maybe after the World Health Organization does their pandemic treaty. It could set the stage for that. But it's important to recognize that the powers that wish they were, the predator class, are not going to only use claims of viruses and pandemics to achieve their goals. They'll use terrorism, they'll use communism, they'll use pandemics, they'll use climate change, they'll use fake alien invasions. It doesn't matter. So by focusing on one area, you're kind of missing the bigger picture. And last thing I'll say, guys, if you want to support me, I recently launched Substack, derekbros.substack.com, where I'm posting my same articles and videos and stuff. It's all for free. This is just if you want to sign up on Substack to support me on a monthly basis, please do so there. Also, you can support me at buymeacoffee.com/derekbros. Same thing. I'm posting my content there every day. But it's maybe every now and then there might be some behind the scenes stuff. But for the most part, this is just for those of you who want to support my work and go the extra mile to make sure that I can continue to do this. And the final thing again is our website is theconsciousresistance.com. Bookmark it there. Follow us on Odyssey, Rockfin, Hive, BitChute, Spotify, everywhere else. We're all over the place. I appreciate you guys. I think that's where I'm going to end it. I hope you've taken away some of this information. I hope you read the articles. I hope you share this with your friend so that we collectively can focus on what's to come for us and what 2030 is going to look like. I know that I'm not going to own nothing and be miserable. I know that I'm not going to be crammed into smart cities or 15-minute cities. I know that myself, my partner, and my friends, we've got land, and now we're working on building the community of our dreams, and we're helping other people do the same. And at the same time, we're fighting back and pushing back against this tyranny. So whatever you can do, wherever you're at, do it. Don't wait. Stop waiting for other people to do it. We're waiting for you. We nominate you. Step up to the plate and get some shit done. And together we can fight for a better world for coming generations. All right, guys, we're going to leave it there. Until next time, remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free. Peace.
Since 2012, the Conscious Resistance Network has been an independent media organization focused on empowering individuals through education, philosophy, health, and community organizing. We work to create a world where corporate and state power do not rule over the lives of free human beings. Our motto is leading by example and helping others in their pursuit of freedom. Visit theconsciousresistance.com to find our articles, documentaries, interviews, podcasts, books, and more. Remember, you are powerful, you are beautiful, and you are free.